Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm going to reflect with you on carrying on Jesus' grassroots movement of peace and nonviolence from Luke chapter 10. This podcast is a project of www.beatitudecenter.org, where you can find many other podcasts and regular Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus and practicing nonviolence and working for a more just, more peaceful world. So let's begin with a little prayer. So I invite you, wherever you are, just to take a deep breath and to relax and to recenter yourself and to enter into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely and personally and every human being as well. And let's welcome the nonviolent Jesus here with us and ask for the grace to follow him more faithfully and to do God's will of peace. God of peace, thank you for all the blessings of life, love, and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect on the nonviolent Jesus and how he built a grassroots movement of nonviolence from Galilee to Jerusalem, when he sent out 72 disciples to proclaim your reign of peace. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, strengthen us, and send us out all over again into this turbulent world as lambs into the midst of wolves to proclaim your reign of peace and love here at hand, that we might be your holy peacemakers. In Jesus' name, amen. So welcome, dear friends. As I said, today I want to look at Jesus as a movement organizer and how he organizes a bottom-up, people-power, grassroots movement of nonviolence from Galilee to Jerusalem, and how we might carry on his grassroots movement of nonviolence today. In the last few episodes of this podcast, I've talked with my friends Brian McLaren and Shane Claiborne about the rise of authoritarianism, oligarchy, white supremacy, corporate greed, and permanent war-making, and how Jesus responded to that during his own life. Today, I want to look specifically at the story of Luke chapter 10 and propose that text as a framework for our response. So this is all from Luke chapter 10, verses 1 to 22. If you want to go deeper into this, you might check out my recent commentary, The Gospel of Peace. So Luke says Jesus sends 72 disciples in pairs ahead of him to whatever town he was going to visit to lay the groundwork and prepare people for nonviolent resistance to the empire and God's coming reign. In effect, he creates 36 teams of nonviolent trainers and sends them out into the war-torn countryside to invite people out of the culture of war and empire, out of the poverty that they're suffering, and into the new life of loving nonviolence. So I think he's not just a community organizer or even a movement builder. He's a nonviolent general who commands a nonviolent army, but instead of waging war, he wages peace. He sends them out to disarm everyone, dismantle the empire, and lead humanity into the peace of God's reign to welcome Jesus and his gifts to So he's mobilizing a real grassroots campaign of active nonviolence, an authentic, holy peace movement that marches from Galilee to Jerusalem, where he will undertake nonviolent direct action. It's totally like Gandhi on the 1930 Salt March across India, and the same as Dr. King on the Selma to Montgomery March for Civil Rights. That's why I always joke, you know, Jesus thinks he's Gandhi. He thinks he's Dr. King. He's just like them, and we're supposed to be like them too. So I propose that the best way to respond to the crisis we're all dealing with right now, to oligarchy, corporate greed, the culture of lies, white supremacy, permanent warfare, nuclear weapons, environmental destruction, to the Trump administration, Republican Party, Fox News, and this rising authoritarianism and global chaos, is to carry on Jesus' grassroots people power movement of creative, organized nonviolence today. We need to join these movements to join similar movements and campaigns today, or to start one locally, nationally, and globally. That's what I think it means to follow Jesus in this world. To put it almost stupidly, Jesus did not sit under a tree and pray throughout his life. He got up and took public action and organized and led a grassroots movement to confront the empire, which is daring and dangerous and public and ultimately a threat to the status quo, to the rich, to the empire, which is why they killed him. If we really are his followers, I propose we too have to get up, get moving, start marching, start organizing, and start speaking out in similar campaigns of daring nonviolence today. So let's look at the story. I'm just going to walk through it, and I hope folks will return to it later and study it. So the first thing he says, according to Luke chapter 10, is, go on your way. So is the imperative tense, get going. Go forth and make peace. That always sounds to me like Jesus. He's always empowering people and urging us to get up and get moving. He wants the movement moving. In Matthew, he says, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves, which I always thought meant there. We get, at times, we get to coo, and other times we get to hiss. That's what people of nonviolence do. We coo and we hiss, but we don't hurt anybody. But Luke says something even more challenging. Behold, I'm sending you like lambs among wolves. Wow. So let's think about that. That's the teaching right there. That's the way we're going to live for the rest of this year as we go into the future. Jesus is sending us into the world of permanent war and empire and oligarchy and violence as peaceful, gentle, unarmed people. We are to be as vulnerable and harmless as lambs. Imagine a little lamb surrounded by a pack of wolves. That's Jesus' image of the life of his disciple. That's us. That's the life of nonviolence in a culture of total violence. That's the image of a peacemaker in a world of permanent war. What can we expect when we go forth to make peace? To be eaten alive. Are there any questions? You know, this is the job description, and this has been my experience. If you speak out for peace and justice and creation, you will get pushback or opposition or full-on rejection or much worse. So get ready, and now we get to respond with nonviolent love, because Jesus has been training us in the Sermon on the Mount to be as gentle as lambs. So then he gets very specific in the instructions to the 72. Take nothing for the journey. Isn't that powerful? No money, no sack, no sandals, and greet no one on the way. So when we remember that Jesus is sending his followers into the Galilean countryside, where the Roman death squads are roaming around on alert to kill anyone who's stirring up the public with talk of revolution, then his teaching makes perfect sense. He's organizing an illegal underground movement. So his advice is very practical. Be on alert. Be ready to go. You know, there's nothing really idealistic about this. This is very serious and down to earth, this mission. And I'm sending you to proclaim peace and bring peace and make peace and welcomes God's reign of peace. And that, in this kind of environment, it means the movement, you all are going to be a threat to the ruling imperial war-making establishment. That's why I always ask myself and my friends, how urgently are we taking this work of justice, disarmament, and creation? And are we a threat to the ruling oligarchy today? That's what I learned from the Berrigans, you know, and why I've been in and out of jail for 40 years. Next, he says, into whatever house you enter, first say, peace to this household. If a peaceful person lives there, your peace will rest on him. But if not, it will return to you. Stay in the same house and eat and drink what is offered to you, for the laborer deserves his payment. Do not move about from one house to another. Whatever town you enter and they welcome you, eat what is said before you. Cure all the sick and say to them, the reign of God is at hand for you. And whatever town you enter and they do not receive you, go out into the streets and say, the dust of your town that clings to our feet, even that we shake off against you. But know this, the reign of God is at hand for you. I tell you, it will be more tolerable for Sodom on that day than for that town. So this is very rich. If we're going to be living out this mission today and be joining the bottom-up people power grassroots movements of nonviolence, as followers of the nonviolent Jesus, that means we are from now on only speaking the language of peace. We use nonviolent communication. We use the words of peace and invite people out of this insane culture here and now to live in God's reign of peace. And we try to make people feel at peace, to be a peaceful presence in their midst, and to affirm their peace, and to lead people deeper into God's peace. I think, you know, by being calm and peaceful, that's how we continue Jesus' gift of healing one another. And this was at the heart of the teachings of my friend and teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, who once put it this way: if you are a rock of peace, if you attend to that first and foremost, you will always bring peace to everyone around you. And you will be mindful of every word you say so that you're always using nonviolent language and so that your presence and your words always serve and heal and disarm others. And in that way, you become what St. Francis calls us to be, instruments of God's peace. And that's what the ideal of movement people is supposed to be about. We're supposed to be like Gandhi and Dr. King. So then next, Jesus issues, notice, these blessings to those who welcome people of peace and warnings to those who reject peace. To his disciples, he's advising them to shake off the dust from the places that reject them. But I, having wrestled with that for 40 years, it took me a long time to realize it's not about, that'll show you. No, it's not that we're not tainted by the rejection, that the dust that reminds us of being rejected doesn't cling to us, so that we won't waste our time holding on to resentment and grudges and hurts. So he's telling them to keep their focus on God's reign and on proclaiming God's reign, not on being rejected if that happened and your hurt feelings. And notice that his warnings to those who reject the peacemaking disciples are addressed not to individuals, but to communities and cities. Now, this is very instructive too. The villages which reject his peacemaking disciples will suffer worse consequences than the mythically sinful city of Sodom. So that's a serious warning. And by the way, folks, what was the sin of Sodom? The sin of Sodom was economic injustice. And it's much easier to name it in other ways. They were oppressing the poor and stealing all the riches for them. That's what's going on. And Jesus is condemning that behavior, which is what he would do today to our culture. Whoever listens to you listens to me. Whoever rejects you rejects me. And whoever rejects me rejects the one who sent me. I think these teachings promise that if we are sincerely, honestly, prayerfully, and nonviolently going forth as his followers, proclaiming the gospel message and God's reign of peace, what? Well, then we speak for him. Wow. And if someone is speaking this gospel message, the good news of the Sermon on the Mount, we should listen and take that message to heart, because Jesus is speaking to us. And so is the God of peace. That makes me think, well, we should only be listening to the voices that speak words of peace and nonviolence, those who are calling for an end to all the war and the greed and oligarchy and nuclear weapons and environmental destruction, and turn off the voices that serve the culture of war and greed. But here's the thing that gets me so excited about this text. What is so shocking is that the 72 return rejoicing. Apparently, they fulfilled their mission. And the word joy is used about 5 times. Lord, they say, even the demons are subject to us because of your name. They had gone out into the villages, met the people, talked with the people, spoken about these Sermon on the Mount teachings on peace, love, and nonviolence. They offered themselves as people, peaceful people, would have told them about the great teacher. They healed everyone by their peaceful presence and message and announced the coming of God's reign of peace and, hey, we can all live nonviolently and we can resist this empire, and invited everyone into a new way of life. And they were welcomed and their message was taken to heart. Well, of course it was, because people are sick and tired of empire and they're oppressed. And this is good news. This is true nonviolent revolution. The disciples were amazed to find that movements work, just as we are. So Luke is showing us here the positive spiritual consequences of joining Jesus' grassroots campaign of peace and justice. If we take up his mission and go forth and proclaim peace in God's reign and heal people, not only will we really help others and maybe lead movements of resistance and actually transform and even disarm this culture, we ourselves will be greatly blessed and filled with joy. This is a work of God. This is the work of the Holy Spirit. And so we will receive spiritual consolation. And that's not going to happen if you're supporting the culture. So, but what's even more interesting is Luke goes further and tells us in one of the few times how Jesus reacts, and in particular, how Jesus feels, which is very important if you're trying to be an authentic disciple. Like, how does Jesus feel going through his life? And I want to support him, and I'm going to feel like him. This is what I'm getting at. And so Jesus says, I observe Satan fall like lightning from the sky. Well, that's just the code word for Roman Empire. You know, Satan means empire. I saw 8 empire fall because you all were built at the beginning of a movement. By organizing and launching his grassroots campaign of peace and nonviolence, Jesus can see the beginning of the end of the Roman Empire, falling like lightning from the sky. This is what Gandhi experienced in his famous 1930 salt march. Once he arrived at the sea and made his illegal salt, breaking the British law and monopoly, he set off a grassroots movement. But Gandhi could see then the end of British rule over India. He said, okay, this is inevitable now, because nonviolence becomes contagious. Grassroots movements of peace and nonviolence, which announce the end of war, injustice, greed, and oppression, always work. I think if you have the eyes of Jesus, you could see Rosa Parks, for example, refusing to give up her seat December 1st, 1955, in segregated Montgomery. And when she did that act of civil disobedience, segregation fell like lightning from the sky and launched a movement. That's what we're getting at here. This kind of public action of nonviolent resistance erodes the pillars of the culture of empire and empowers people to non-cooperate and then resist until eventually the empire collapses and God's reign breaks through. That's what we're talking about. And then he says, behold, I have given you power. I cannot tell you enough how seriously Martin Luther King took that. Maybe he was one of the very few people who did. Jesus goes on, power to tread upon serpents and scorpions and upon the full force of the enemy, and nothing will harm you. Wow. This has been a key instruction for my entire life. We have been given power, the power of nonviolence, power over all the forces of death. That's why Gandhi says, he totally studied this text, active, creative, public nonviolence is a force more powerful than all the weapons of the world combined. Well, he's just saying what Jesus said. We have a way, a power to resist every form of violence and transform it. Even this culture we're dealing with today and the, let's say, nuclear weapons and fossil fuels, without, you know, using violence, if we dare wield this power. So Dr. King defined nonviolence as power. That's what he said. Nonviolence is power. You are not powerless. I've studied his speeches, and you can read that in the fine print, which is the exact opposite of what the Roman Empire said to what every oligarch, dictator, and authoritarian has said throughout history up through today. That's what you hear on Fox News and through the Trump administration. That's what the empire, the war machine, the media, the culture of violence wants. They want us to feel powerless and helpless. That's the strategy, and we go right along with it. Hey, there's nothing I can do. Ah, that's a shame. Ah, that's too bad. I wish if only somebody had done something. Well, then, by the way, you end up like the passersby at the cross. Why didn't he do something? Well, I go astray here. This is especially the problem with church people. We do what the culture tells us, not what the nonviolent Jesus said. And I, to be really blunt, none of that is God's will. That's not how Jesus wants us to respond to this culture. He wants us to get up and go forth in small grassroots movements for positive social change. And he's giving us a weapon, the power of active love and truth through the grassroots methodology of courageous, fearless, organized nonviolence to bring down the structures of violence and injustice. In Dr. King's case, to take on segregation, racism, and war. I mean, what Dr. King was doing, like what the abolitionists did, it's never been done before. In Gandhi's case, to bring down the British Empire. And there have been 100 other successful examples of nonviolent resistance movements since Dr. King. So then Jesus says this spectacular teaching. I really invite you to ponder and experiment with. That's what I've done in my life. If you practice and teach nonviolence, no harm will come to you. Nothing can truly hurt you. Instead, you will wield the power of God to disarm and transform the world. So here's the theory as I understand it. God cannot protect us from harm if you're armed and out there doing harmful things, or you're supporting the culture of harm and death and destruction through your apathy and indifference, if you see my point. If you use violence, if we use violence on others, we are rejecting God's will, and we're going to suffer the consequences of our violent actions or our passivity and apathy in the face of war, which is participating in violence. But you see, what goes around comes around. However, if we are unarmed and totally nonviolent like Jesus and the Galilee 72, we will trust in God and go forth and do the mission, and God will protect us because nonviolence is God's will and God's way and requires our conscious reliance on God, and God is there for us. That's just the spiritual teaching. If we do harm, harm will come to us. Violence in response to violence always leads to further violence, period. If we do no harm, no harm will come to us. Now, you're going, yeah, good luck with that, John. You know, I've experimented that with very consciously over 40 years. I can remember in 1985, living in the refugee camp in the heart of El Salvador. We were being bombed every hour by the United States, and the death squads were around us. I was under the direction of the Jesuits, who were all later assassinated, my friends, and pondering these texts. And I was like, okay, God, I'm going to be nonviolent here, and I'm going to be very public about it, and you're going to protect me. And I've been like that ever since, in soup kitchens and shelters and all the 100 jail cells I've been around the country and all the times I've been arrested. And I watched my friends, the Berrigans and Tutu and so many friends getting arrested, how they've been protected. And it's almost like, you know, even Gandhi and Dr. King chose their hour just like Jesus did. So what I'm trying to say is I think Jesus' words are true. But here's the final point It's so amazing. Jesus starts talking about joy. What? Who talks about joy? We're talking about Trump and oligarchy and war and the end of the world. Do not rejoice because the spirits are subject to you, he says. Rejoice because your names are written in heaven. He wants us to rejoice. The only suggestion he makes is critically important and very subtle. Don't focus on yourselves, you guys. Don't claim any credit for the good you are doing. Give all the credit to God. Focus on God and God's reign. Even your joy, let that be a gift from God and focused on God. So rejoice because your names are written in heaven. Well, that's a nice thing to ponder. God knows what we've done with our lives. And if we're doing God's will and joining God's grassroots movement, God's peace movement, to disarm and transform this culture, God is working through us, and we're going to feel the spiritual implications of that in joy, and we can take heart that our names are written in God's book. And I think that's worth aspiring to, that might have our names in God's ledger, so to speak. So I think as we participate in all the grassroots movements for justice, disarmament, and creation today, we should be rejoicing. Even as we grieve, we can also rejoice. And then Luke says, at that very moment, Jesus rejoiced in the Holy Spirit. Now, dear friends who are listening to this, I say this with all the solemnity I can muster. This is the only time in the four Gospels when Jesus is happy. It's the only time when Jesus is filled with joy. So this is very important for us. Why does Jesus rejoice? What makes him rejoice? Because his followers did what he said and went forth in a bottom-up people power grassroots movement and proclaimed God's reign of peace everywhere they went. So I invite us to get on with the movement and help getting our grassroots movements moving on all fronts, justice, disarmament, and creation, to really resist and help end war, end the corporate greed and white supremacy and oligarchy and nuclear weapons and poverty, environmental destruction, maybe even to tithe our time to the movements and to do our part to help disarm and heal the world. Okay, why? Because it's good and right and holy. Things are so bad. What we're going to need now is a global grassroots movement of bold, active, people-powered nonviolence, the likes of which the world has never seen, way beyond what Mahatma Gandhi and Dr. King could have ever imagined. So it's really all hands on deck. I'm recalling, as I'm sharing this, the story of my dear friend Ken Buttigan. When he was starting out as a young activist, I think around 1982, he went to New York to see my friend and teacher, Daniel Berrigan. And he said, okay, Dan, what do I do? How do I do it? And Dan said to him, all you have to do is find a group of people you can pray with and march with. And Ken said, right. And he's been doing it ever since then. He's been done amazing work. I think that's kind of the way forward for all of us, according to Luke 10, that this is going to be the new normal for us. But the point of Luke 10, if you really dig deep, if you're interested in discipleship, is that on your worst days, as things get worse, when you want to throw up your hands in despair and anger and give up, if you have friends to pray with and march with, even just two or three, the little community that Jesus sends you out with, you stand on the street corner with in your public vigil, you can keep on going. You keep going anyway, trusting in God. Why? I propose in the end just to make the poor guy happy, just to help Jesus rejoice all over again. We don't want to make Jesus sadder or betray him or deny him or abandon him or crucify him all over again. but to make Jesus rejoice. And to do that, we do that by carrying on his grassroots movements for peace and justice as lambs sent into the midst of wolves to our own Jerusalems, to Washington, D.C., to all the places of power, oligarchy, white supremacy, war, and empire, to speak out for disarmament and justice and creation, to proclaim the truth to the culture of war and lies, to heal all victims of violence, and proclaim that God's reign of universal love and peace is at hand. All the best. So thanks so much for listening to the Nonviolent Jesus podcast. You can hear more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at www.beatitudecenter.org. And please consider offering a donation to support this free work. And if you can, please leave some positive feedback or review or suggestions at NCR or Apple or Spotify, or whatever platform you use. May the God of peace bless everyone and keep us all safe and sound as we go forth following the nonviolent Jesus. See you next time.